Gummidge of a Soccer Bello. This is FieldPod.com coming to you from our studio high atop Tbilisi's sunny and picturesque Rustavelli Avenue. The week in Georgia in English. Today is Thursday, the 28th of March, 2013. For a change, we're recording in the morning. Sorry to miss the Thursday news. On this date in 845, Paris is sacked by Vikings, who collect a huge ransom in exchange for leaving. In 1776, Danza founds San Francisco. In 1854, France and Britain declare war on Russia, and the Crimean War begins. In 1871, the Paris Commune is formally established in Paris. In 1930, Constantinople and Angora change their name to Istanbul and Ankara. 1939, Madrid surrenders and the Spanish Civil War ends. 1979, nuclear accident at Three Mile Island. Birthdays are Lady Gaga, Mario Vargas Llosa, Maxim Gorky, and Zbigniew Brzezinski, as well as Nino Ananiashvili, ballerina and artistic director of the State Ballet of Georgia. She was born today in 1963. We are Cameron Christensen, Matthias Hooter, and me, Mark Mullen. Nothing we say can be connected with any of our employers, past, present, and future, or future, ever. Thanks again to those for posting on our forum. Somebody mentioned that Kargigogo, the new Georgian food truck in Portland, Oregon, which is doing very well by all reports, is run by a former Peace Corps volunteer, once again proving that the Peace Corps, along with the Freedom Support Act scholarships, are the coolest international activities of the U.S. government. If you'd like to comment or ask a question, go to tbilpod.com or send us an email at tbilpod@gmail.com. My Georgian Journal and Kvitis Politra column this past week is about civil service reform and how there should be a pool of people talking about that. Coming out tomorrow will be about USAID and how it really is time for it to fix itself, first of all, by being more transparent. Constitutional amendments enacted yesterday.
Yes, so after long debates in Parliament and back and forth about, you know, test votings and whatnot. The Parliament adopted a few days ago the constitutional changes in the last hearing, and yesterday Misha signed them. So basically this means that Misha will no longer be, or the President is no longer able to use a kind of this a short window of a few weeks to dissolve the parliament, potentially 6 months after the parliamentary elections and 6 months ahead of the presidential election. There would have been a time window where the president could dissolve the government, and then appoint a new government without having
Parliament would be dissolved if they did not approve his appointees for the governmental posts three times. And apparently that was like a 2 or 3 week period if that was officially established. Now he can no longer do that.
Yeah, it was not a very smart part of the Constitution for it to be in there, and was a little bit ridiculous that when the Constitution was amended, they had it taking, you know, force a year later, and, you know, the whole thing was fairly ill-conceived from the start. I mean, it's certainly a step forward, independent of the politics involved. In terms of the politics involved, I was on Ekke Kvesi Tadzi's show Friday night talking about this, but I didn't at first really understand this sort of rank vote or test vote. But the idea behind it was as a way for the national movement faction to sort of test loyalty. And so it ended up working fairly well, thanks to Dato Usupashvili, the chair of parliament. In fact, Otsneba would have been able to get enough votes to pass the constitutional amendments if they had wanted to. It would have taken some work. It probably would have been a little underhanded and coercive, but they could have done it. But it would have been a bad thing because then that would not have involved the minority. So what happened was they had a test vote. Usupashvili very kindly said, well, that shows we couldn't do it without the minority. And so Misha and everybody then nodded and said, okay. And then they passed it unanimously with the minority. And I think it was it showed a sort of magnanimous side to Usupashvili. I mean, it truly was negotiated.
Well, but certainly in terms of process, like maybe in what you were just talking about, that makes sense for something. But like, I just think this was almost essentially a moot point, since after October 2013, this was going to change anyway. So, I mean, it was the practical purpose of it was...
It had become sort of a sticking point. I mean, on Friday, Emeti aired an interview with Misha where he alleged that had the constitutional amendments failed, he would have initiated the same proposal anyway. The quote was, quote, "If this issue failed, I had prepared exactly the same amendments with slight legal nuances, and I was going to present it to Parliament, and I would tell them now, oh, now you failed it as you were stubborn, but I don't need this power, and I'm not a fool to initiate dismissing the government. We had this scenario in case the project failed." Misha said he's worried about the current government's attitude towards European leaders. He claims the previous government, unlike the current one, actually listened to Europe's position on most issues, including on 99% of the issues the Venice Commission raised. He also said that the UNM is not a monolithic bloc, that there are fights among them. It isn't a one-man show. He is an equal among equals. He claimed that if UNM had won the October parliamentary elections, he would have left politics. But now that UNM has lost, he intends to ensure that the government, quote, has an effective opposition and it isn't destroyed, end quote. Misha said that money means everything for BI. While it means nothing to him, he referred to the relationship between the late businessman Badrika Patrikhatashvili and BI as a competition of oligarchs. I mean, that point about arguments within the UNM is important. And even though, you know, this was sort of a minor issue, I mean, it was just a matter for a couple of weeks and wasn't going to happen anyway or whatever else, there was a fair amount of fighting within the faction. And I think that, you know, what's happening is that Misha's getting a little bit annoyed with the independent channels of communication. It's not that the members of the UNM are going over to the other side. It's just that they're just negotiating in Parliament, as happens. And he gets a little bothered with that and tends to be among the more belligerent of them, whereas some within the faction are a little bit more willing to make a deal and move forward.
So UNM party cohesion is basically what the discussion is about.
UNM party cohesion and also faction cohesion within the parliament, which are two different things. I mean, in terms of party organizing and things like that, I don't really know much about what's happening there, and I think that's Vano Medavashvili's job. But within the faction, and that's where the negotiating seems to be going on.
By the way, what project was he referring to there? The project of Georgia?
The project of just making Georgia, you know, great and have lots of big new buildings. Singapore, exactly. The Singapore project. That's what we should be calling it. There's also been much discussion about the High Council of Justice. The idea is to preserve the judges, but to replace members of the High Council of judges. There's been a lot of negotiations about that. I mean, originally it was... you know, there was sort of, BI wasn't paying much attention to it. Then there was a tête-à-tête conversation between BI and Kote Kubalashvili, the head of the Supreme Council. Seems to have gone fairly well, and there seems to be agreement about that.
Right. I mean, the High Council of Justice is basically the body that regulates, it's the self-regulatory entity for the court and judicial system. So since the courts are perceived to be UNM leaning, while the prosecutors are Georgian Dream leaning, it's of you know, it's an important topic for all sides, and so the initial suggestions in the Georgian Dream were to kind of replace large parts of the Supreme Council of the High Council of Justice, because parts of them are judges and the other part of that entity is political appointees. And so now the question
is...
Well,
they're people who are... They're promoted by non-governmental organizations and then approved by Parliament.
Yeah, but they're basically...
I mean, okay, fine, you can call them political appointees, but just,
yeah.
I mean,
well,
so, as
okay.
a matter of detail.
I, you know, always wanted to promote discord among the Tapilpod trio. I disagree with that, Matthias. I mean, I think that it's not that there's a political side to each one of the groups. I think that what has happened with the judges is that the judges were controlled by the prosecutors before. I mean,
right.
I think everybody
right.
knows that, and
yeah.
so many things didn't go to trial anyway. The prosecutors controlled plea bargaining, and I don't know the number, but I would guess that 80% of people in prison never went to trial anyway, because it was all controlled by the so-called plea bargain, which is not really a plea bargain in any sense, the way they have it in America or anywhere else.
also, the prosecutors had just become incredibly lazy. I mean, they just never had to do any work. They never, and that's happened. So what's happened now is that the Minister of Justice has said quite clearly to the judges, if you ever get a call from a prosecutor, you need to report it immediately, personally, to me. And so what's happened now is that prosecutors come to court and they don't really know how to do much work. I mean, they don't research the case. They don't act like normal prosecutors do because they just haven't had to do that for a long time. Now, yes, they are a lot of them appointed by Tsneba recently. But so the idea is that the judges will remain who they are, but their national movement appointees, one way or another. I mean, they're not national movement appointees, but they're sort of
coming loyal-ish.
Right, I mean, they're loyal-ish or whatever else.
But are they lifetime appointees?
I don't know the term. I think it's...
10 years? Something?
You have long contracts, yeah. So you're
pretty
not lifetime.
Long setup. But the idea is that now they will be independent, and they are acting independently. I mean, they are saying in cases where, they're not just, sort of pushing back against Otsneva. They seem to be, much more more impartial. And supposedly what BI has told the High Council of Justice is, look, I just don't want you working for the national movement. If you're independent, what I want is for you to be independent. And if you are independent, that's fine. If you're not, then we've got a problem. So I don't know. I mean, I'm relatively optimistic about the changes in the courts, and I do not see these changes as being really just one political side to another.
Right. No, but I mean, the High Council of Justice is the body that can punish or sanction or judges, and they can kind of impose. You know, that you can move a judge from Tbilisi to the last village in Kakheti.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of the leverage that somebody could have over a judge.
Yeah, that's a huge issue. That was a big problem.
And stuff like
in Shevardnadze's time, they had this, this new testing, and much heralded by USAID and the American Bar Association, that look, now we have all this testing, but the bribery moved from becoming a judge to where you get appointed and, to be in Vake as opposed to Tribuli. Nothing against Tribuli, but, was a lot of money went around the table. So anybody wants to take a look at the fairness of this new council, look at where judges are appointed.
Well, the discussions are still going on right now, but I think the discussion is like, how can we get a self-regulatory body that actually works and,
I hope so. So, on Sunday, strong winds caused serious damage across Georgia. In Kobyleti, the winds took the roofs off 47 houses. In Khelbachaudi district, 93 houses were damaged and 9 houses were de-roofed. 80 houses damaged in Gori. 50 houses lost their roofs in Tbilisi. Over 100,000 consumer households in the region were left without electricity. Most in Ajara. Along the coastline, Batumi, Kobyleti, and Ureki were hit hard by the storm. Beach restaurants were damaged. Boardwalks were destroyed and street lamps were also damaged. On Sunday, Prime Minister Bettina Ivanishvili ordered the creation of an emergency response headquarters to deal with the aftermath of the natural disaster. Georgian Energy and Natural Resources Minister Kahi Kaladze is in charge of the headquarters. BI said that the government will immediately begin restoration of the affected areas. Kaladze estimates the financial damage of the storm at about 10 million lari. According to the Tbilisi Energy Service, heavy winds slightly damaged the Tbilisi Public Service Hall, or the Mushrooms, roof, but it was soon repaired.
Those are definitely well situated to just kind of take off.
Exactly. I know, I keep waiting to see like one giant potato chip floating out over the river.
But I think, I even heard that someone in Gori died when a roof fell on his car.
Really?
I think that there were some deaths actually due to these high winds.
Georgian Dream put forward 3 majoritarian candidates for the midterm parliamentary elections, which will be held on April 27th. Bakhdati majoritarian district candidate is Pata Kiknavelidze. Samtredia's candidate is Girgi Kahiani. Nazila Devi's candidate is Tamer Kordzaya. All of them are lawyers. Kordzaya was involved in the broadcasting.
She is the head of the Journalistic Charter of Ethics, which is an ethical journalistic self-regulatory body.
And formerly was the media expert at Gaila.
Uh-huh. UNM also named the majoritarian candidates they're putting forward. In Nazila Devi region, it's former state minister for diaspora Papuna Davataya, and Samtredia City Assembly deputy chairperson Emzar Shubladze. and Baghdati, the deputy chairperson of Baghdadi City Assembly, Kvitchia,
Sigurdidze.
And these three seats are up for re-election because the people who were voted on these seats moved to different government positions.
Exactly. The Swiss ambassador to Georgia, Gunther Bechler, appealed to BI in an open letter he wrote after unprecedented and partisan statements of some European MPs, end quote. In his letter, the Swiss ambassador, and we might note that Switzerland is not a member of the European Union, the Swiss ambassador wrote that BI's open letter to the European People's Party, quote, is an excellent answer and perfectly expresses the grievances and feelings of the Georgian people, end quote. Bechler also wrote that Georgia, quote, is much freer than it ever used to be in the past and is much freer than any country in the neighborhood, end quote. Georgia's former ambassador to Germany and Italy, Kota Gabashvili, slammed the letter and said that it was unacceptable for him as an ambassador of any country to dare and criticize the European People's Party.
So wait, UNM, first off, is a member of the European People's Party. Secondly, the Swiss have a huge role that they're playing in the South Caucasus in addition to the Geneva talks. And Bechler, I think, was making some very appropriate statements regarding some radical comments coming out of the EPP and some very, I mean, there's just been this incredible kind of press push abroad, you know, about all of the crazy political arrests and everything that's happening. Frankly, I heard what I thought was a very good question yesterday by a Georgian man to someone who said, you know, I don't understand why everybody's talking about these political arrests. There's only one minister who's in jail right now, and that's Bacho Akhalaya, right? I mean, so there's just been this kind of overemphasis, I would say, on everything that's been happening, and we should not forget that the UNM is a member of the European People's Party.
I mean, yes and no. I think the question is who the overemphasis is by. I mean, the reality of it is it's a few MPs in the European Parliament.
It's six or seven guys.
They're in the People's Party, and the letter says essentially, hey, you should watch, you know, make sure that you're nice and act in accordance with the rules or whatever else. I mean, the letter, if you read it, is not particularly...
Bechler's letter?
No. Oh. The letter from the MPs. It's just, you know, it's just sort of saying, you can tell that
it's kind of aggressive.
It's aggressive, but okay, somebody went to them and said, hey, you know, will you sign this letter? And they're like, yeah, sure, whatever. I mean, it was kind of saying, hey, you know, be sure that you, you know, take care of human rights or whatever.
Yeah, but isn't the first time that they're making these
right,
kinds
there's,
of statements.
Okay, there's a lot of this stuff, but it's just a few MPs. And I think for, you know, there's this, on the one hand here, there's this feeling of this onslaught of criticism, when actually these are just letters from guys that nobody cares about. I mean, they're a big deal here, but they're really not that important. And it was a mistake for Usupashvili to go to the, you know, to go there and say, like, you know, hey, you guys need to pipe down. I mean, it really, he should not have said that because it really didn't matter. I mean, there's no reason to, you know. Now, in BI's letter, I think, was a little, you know, you could tell that he felt a little bit under siege. I don't know whether it was necessary to write it. I think what he wrote was fine. I mean, and perfectly appropriate. And I think that, and I don't think, especially considering that that Switzerland is not a member, that the Swiss ambassador's letter is fine. I mean, for him to say that. I mean, I think it's reasonable. And there is clearly a difference between the attitudes towards Georgians, towards their government, and the international community towards their government. When you talk to foreigners that are located outside of Georgia, they've clearly had a bit of the Kool-Aid, and there seems to be a sort of PR operation. I just think that it's a mistake for there to be too much of a response to these isolated letters coming in.
And the Swiss ambassador also wrote that in his letter, that it's, you know, BI, you shouldn't, like, you know, pay attention to these guys and don't bother responding.
In Brussels last week, the 14th and final plenary session of the negotiations over the EU-Georgia Association Agreement ended well. Georgia will be able to initial the Association Agreement during the Eastern Partnership Summit in Vilnius in November 2013. Compared to the Partnership and Cooperation Agreement, which it will replace, the Association Agreement is more comprehensive, includes deep and comprehensive free trade, which will give Georgia the possibility to increase political association and economic integration into the European Union, and will allow Georgia to join the European Union within the next 3 years.
Mark is lying.
Okay, I just thought I'd slide that in there. See if anybody was listening. No, Georgia will be in there. It'll take a little while, but, you know, not 3 years. Today, Russia's chief sanitary doctor and Tpilpod.com's mascot, Gennady Onishenko, stated that the Russian Sanitary Service will give 40 companies producing Georgian alcoholic beverages permission to sell their products on the Russian market. Onishenko said that the laboratory research is over and that the necessary permissions have been signed. Onishenko said that the delegation of Rospotrebnadzor will visit Georgia on April 4th. First to examine the remaining wine-producing companies. In yet another delegation of Russian bureaucrats coming to Georgia to make sure that the wine is safe for public consumption.
That's so funny. They shouldn't have announced it. I mean, like, now there's going to be this group of people who are following Onishenko's, you know, crowd around.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't we had this exact same report every show for the last 3 months? Yeah,
they're doing
something.
A lot of wine tasting.
I mean, it's just like, you know, I mean, really.
But this is the first time that they've actually approved, and the first time that, I mean, I don't know the last time Onishenko was in Georgia, but yeah, that's a step.
Recently they approved, I think, mineral waters and stuff,
mandarins. You know, all right, keep sampling. On Thursday, Defense Minister Irakli Alasanian told Parliament that the Defense Ministry purchased 25,000 SIM cards last year in order to build Facebook support before the election. Alasanian said that the SIM cards had cost the state $18,000. Quote, the SIM cards from Alasanian. The SIM cards were given to the Operative Technical Department of the Military Police. Later, a 40-person group was set up in order to provide likes for the Facebook page of their political movement. End quote.
It's funny because it's like the most inefficient way of collecting Facebook likes. There are companies that you can contract, and they set up fake profiles, and they like whatever you do. And I mean, yeah. Bidzina, and I've looked at profiles of Bidzina and Misha and other leaders, and there's indications that some of their likes are from these like fake profiles. But it's like you kind of American looking, you know, kind of stock images of some, you know,
somebody named, you know, like Judy Jones.
Right.
On Friday, the former shareholder of Tbil Avmcheny, an aircraft manufacturer, the aircraft manufacturing company, filed a lawsuit demanding the return of their property in July 2010. The Defense Ministry stated that Tbil Avmcheny decided to give the government management of the company on their own initiative. The former shareholders claimed that they were threatened into giving the company to the state. February 2013, the company was given to the Ministry of Economy. 24 shareholders had privatized 90% of the JSC in 2004, paying $67 million for the stake. Now they declared that the enterprise was successful and profitable, and if not various illegal measurements by the government, they were not going to see the property after such a large investment. This was clearly coercive. I mean, everybody knows that they were forced to give the thing to the government in 2010.
This is what was bombed in 2008 too, wasn't it? Or no?
I don't think so. It's right in Tbilisi. I mean, I don't know actually.
Okay.
But, you know, maybe
there was something
maybe,
right outside of Tbilisi that was bombed.
But I mean, from what I know, it was a somewhat viable business. I don't know that they were exporting tons, but they're a little bit. Maka Gigaoudi, former head of the Parliament's Public Relations Service, will be appointed as deputy governor of Sabartalo region. Gigaoudi confirmed that she will be appointed to this post in April. I sure wish there were no more regional governors.
Sabartalo?
Evidently. I talked to one recently who said that they have no budget. That the regional governors, this regional governor that I spoke to seemed to have plenty of time on his hands. And I don't know, they don't seem to be able to really do very much.
Yeah.
On Monday, socially vulnerable families rallied outside the Tbilisi City Hall to express solidarity with a family of a one-year-old boy who died of hunger in Khalvachodi district on Saturday. The protesters blocked traffic outside City Hall, demanding that the Tbilisi government meet with them and resolve all the issues which socially vulnerable families face. They later met with representatives of Tbilisi City Hall, who promised they would satisfy their demands. This case was on TV and it was much discussed. It's a really sad situation, but you know, the people were interviewed there on their farm. They have an incredible amount of land, very little of which is planted. And it seems to me, I mean, I don't know, a child dying of starvation, I don't know whether they didn't specifically say whether it was calorie deficiency or a mineral or vitamin deficiency or something like that, but I mean, really, it doesn't seem like that needed to have happened. Looking at at the situation that the family was in. I mean, they said, "Well, I was going to try to go work abroad, but it didn't really work out." And I don't know. It seems like a strange case.
It seems also weird that someone from Hrvatska would stand in front of Tbilisi City Hall.
Yeah, no, they were not. It was not the family.
Okay,
it was sort of.
But why is the protest in front of Tbilisi City Hall?
It was a bunch of people that feel vulnerable protesting in front of City Hall about poverty, and somebody came out and said, "Okay, we'll give you what you want." So I think it was the fact of in solidarity with the. On Tuesday, workers at the Poti Metallurgical Plant reached an agreement with the plant's management. Workers had been on strike since Friday, demanding better working conditions, better wages, and that the management rehire fired workers. According to the agreement, a group was established which would work to improve communication between workers and management. On Tuesday, more than 300 employees at the Tbilisi Electric Train Factory went on strike. They say they haven't been paid in months, but the factory's leadership continues giving them false promises. They say their strike will continue until they get paid.
What are they producing?
The train cars, I think, for the metro. Or they're renovating them. And then I think they've been doing some cars for the train, for the Georgian railways.
Okay. I just haven't seen very many new trains around.
Not very new, but I think they're maintaining older ones.
So, more... Agricultural University, Agricola University. On Tuesday, the Minister of Education granted the university its authorization. Representatives of the Authorization Council said the majority of the reasons why the university was deprived of its authorizations had been addressed. According to the Agrarian University, the issue of accreditation for their 27 programs still remains open, which could be problematic for admitting students for the 2013-14 academic year, since only students at accredited programs can receive state grants. In other news, students at the Ag University have made a remake of Pink Floyd's The Wall that is on SoundCloud, posted on our site if you want to have a listen. The lyrics go like this. We don't need your authorization. We don't need no thought control, no dark sarcasm of monitoring. Leave us studs alone.
It's like this libertarian spirit of freedom that comes through there.
Oh, that's so great. You know, I wish I let's send these kids back 8 years and have them go through the university process at that time. And then they can talk about no monitoring and no evaluation and no authorization. And, we'll see how much they like paying bribes to get into the university system and how much they like having professors not go to their classes and how much they like, other people being able to pay for their degrees.
Well, but the question is whether the monitoring and evaluation is really addressing that when there are plenty of universities at which those sorts of things are still somewhat happening, but didn't get disaccredited, But we've already rehashed this matter. So, I'm not sure whether it is the monitoring that does that, since I think there are some people that might believe that that whole process was completely political.
The whole thing is that this has been turned into such a political issue, and I really do not, I personally do not believe it's a political issue.
I personally believe it's a political issue.
Okay, well.
But hey, that's why they pay us the big bucks here in Tbilisi.
who does?
Today.
Not,
of course. What, you don't think I'm getting paid for this?
Damn it. I knew I was getting used.
Today, the Khashoggi police chief and deputy chief died in a car accident on the Tbilisi-Sanaki-Lessalidze highway while they were traveling from Tbilisi to Khashoggi. On Monday, Misha awarded the Excellency Award to the architect Andrea Bruno, who worked on the restoration of the Bhagirathi Temple in Kutaisi. Prior to this, Minister of Culture Guram Odeshadia met with UNESCO's director, who said that Bhagirathi may be removed from the list of monuments protected by UNESCO.
And this is this big cathedral in Kutaisi where the government built a new roof on top of it.
Well, it's not just a new roof. I mean, look, it had been in the 19th century, it had been bombed and was in very bad shape, its whole roof. I mean, it was really kind of in ruins, but it was a very, very old and beautiful cathedral. The norms of historic preservation is that you don't stucco things up. And Misha stuccoed it up. I mean, it was, the whole thing was done so that it now really looks like a new church. And there's you know, there's a, his point was, look, this is an operating church and it's a Georgian church and we can do whatever we want. You know, we, the Georgian nation, being embodied by me, would like to, you know, fix it up this way. And the patriarch went along with that. And, you know, the international community, which is spoken for by UNESCO, according to UNESCO, says that's not the way things should work.
I have to say, just on a personal note, I went there before, or I had been there before they did any, had started any of the renovations and before they had any of the scaffolding outside and, you know, made the experience completely different. And it was one of the most special religious experiences that I've been through, because it was a completely open roof and the service was underway and there were birds landing on the icons. And it was just really amazing and special and unique and something that I don't think you'll ever find again.
Yeah, it really, really was a beautiful place. And now it's like a big church in a lot of, you know, in a lot of places. There is also in one of Eldar Shengalaya's movies, Unusual Exhibition, one of his go check that movie out. And there's a great scene that takes place in that church. On Monday, Tbilisi Mayor Gigi Ugulava answered a bunch of nutty questions on Dato Kovziridze's Tabula TV channel program called A Talk with a Difficult Man. Ugulava spoke about his first sexual interest in actresses. He explained why the former government tried tied the household garbage bill to that of electricity, and he talked about his attitude towards legalization of soft drugs and brothels,
which are so hard to come by otherwise.
Well, brothels are soft drugs.
Well, soft drugs are hard to come by as far as I understand, but brothels are plenty.
Yeah, right. There'll be a list on our website, so feel free to check check that out. Andrea Wilson was appointed the new executive director of the Georgian branch of the International Chamber of Commerce. Wilson provides consultation to ICC's commissions. Provided consultation to ICC's commissions over the past month and is a member of the Law Society of Upper Canada.
They actually, this week also was opened a Dutch business council in Georgia that I guess will start functioning because the Netherlands is considered one of the closest trading part. Well, it's actually the number, the greatest source of FDI for Georgia.
Yeah, but it's because it's an offshore location. Yes.
Yes, and in fact, there was, I'm just looking for this so that we can have it at the same time, but there's Dutch people from the Netherlands appointed as honorary consuls in
Amsterdam, Rotterdam,
and Rotterdam, yeah. On Monday, the Orthodox Church celebrated the Day of Restoration of Autocephaly. Patriarch Ilya II conducted a ceremony at some epic cathedral. That autocephaly is meaning the independence of the church, which sometimes in the 9th century that Georgia became completely independent. And so it's not like the Greek and Romanian and other Orthodox churches, the Russian, where the patriarch in Istanbul is really the sort of first among equals. Georgia doesn't have anyone higher than its patriarch. A journalist in Ajara, Tariel Chekladze, has filed a lawsuit against Avtandil Beridze, the chairman of the Supreme Council of Ajara. The story is that the journalist wrote an article about nepotism in Ajara, and Beridze, much offended, started calling the author a liar, and the piece is full of lies. The journalist is asking for 333 Georgian lari.
No, 3,333
lari in damages. I don't know, saying it's somehow symbolic. I don't know whether another half is coming from the devil or what the story is. Gaila is providing legal assistance. You know, who knows what's going on with 333. According to the 2012 European Neighborhood Policy Action Plan, Georgia is the leader in the region in e-government and is placed number 72 out of 190 countries. According to the Global Innovation Index, Georgia is 71 out of 141. The report says that during the last few years, Georgia's expenditures on research and innovation remain below 1% of GDP. According to the World Economic Forum report on property rights protection, Georgia is in 128th place out of 140 countries. Yet, Georgia still outstrips countries like Russia and Ukraine. Thank heavens for that. World Economic Forum published Its 2013 Travel and Tourism Competitive Report, which assesses 140 economies worldwide based on policies and factors which make them attractive for travel and tourism. Georgia's number 66. Also much discussed on Facebook was the Mercer ranking, which says that Georgia is one of the worst cities in the world to live in, worse than Kinshasa, even, which is, of course, stupid. I sounded off about it on the BBC. Paul Rimpel wrote about it in the Moscow Times, and everybody was just shocked and annoyed by that.
And the International Chamber of Commerce wrote a letter to
of
Mercer,
yeah, right.
Saying,
Fatty blasted off a letter. Yes.
Good, the only thing, I love Paul Rimpel, but I'm sorry, man. I did not get my wallet returned to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I have mixed feelings about this. I don't want the secret to be out, but Tbilisi is a great place to live. I mean, hey, most of us, you know, listening to this show have spent plenty of time here. Mercer is just, I think, you know, what they make their money doing is sort of advising, you know, on international M&As, and this is just some link bait that they put up there just to, you know, get people to, you know, they exist. Geostat data from January and February is in. Georgia's trade turnover was $1.3 billion U.S. dollars in the first 2 months of 2013, a 2% year-on-year decline. During this period, there was a 17% year-on-year increase in exports, which reached $358 million U.S. dollars. However, imports declined by 8% to $975 million. Imports of oil and oil products declined by 12%. Vehicles by 24, hydrocarbons by 19. On Friday, David Marsagishvili took Georgia's second gold medal in freestyle wrestling at the European Wrestling Championship, which was held at the Tbilisi Sports Palace.
Oh, I missed that.
I did too, but, you know, good job, David. From Democracy and Freedom Watch, Misha on Monday presented Parliament with a list of five new ambassadors. The candidates are Khatuna Salakvadze for Lithuania, Zura Pataradze for Kazakhstan, Irakli Koplatadze for Turkey, Temur Shadashinidze for Azerbaijan, and Kote Korkelia to the Council of Europe in Strasbourg. In parliamentary news this week, at the plenary sitting on March 22nd, the Parliament approved amendments on the law on the capital of Georgia, Tbilisi, according to which residents of the capital will pay a fixed tariff for garbage disposal. It says, quote, "The amount of fixed payment per one person should not exceed 3 lari monthly, with a total of 25 lari per 1 cubic meters of waste for legal entities and institutions," says the bill. Until recently, Tbilisi residents paid for garbage disposal depending on electricity consumed. The Parliament will consider the law on common courts on April 3rd. This from Civil.ge, the Supervisory Board of the State-Owned Railway Monopoly appointed Mamuka Bakhtadze as Chief Executive Officer of Georgian Railways. Bakhtadze, who holds an MBA from INSEAD, previously served as CEO of the Georgian International Energy Corporation, part of the holdings of the Georgian Industrial Group.
But he's, I think he's still quite young. He's 30 now. So, you know, don't know how much experience he has, but the last job he held was at this, as you said, Georgian International Energy Corporation, I think, which is part of the Georgian Industrial Group, which is owned by the Bejuashvili clan, largely. So it's
a little harsh. By one of the Bejuashvilis, you know, who also has a brother and two brothers, former head of the intelligence service.
And the other brother was, or is still, an MP for the United National Movement. So it's a company that has been perceived as, you know, linked to the United National Movement. So it's I think, an encouraging sign that the government hires somebody who worked there last, because he doesn't seem to be the Georgian.
I will say, from talking to people around the company, I mean, there are a lot of companies that were linked with the National Movement in one way or another, but the National Movement had a way of telling those companies what to do, you know, that now you will buy this building for this price and do this and whatever else, and a lot of the people around those companies are totally okay with, you know, how everything is going right now, with the hopes that they're not going to be told what they, you know, need to do. in exchange sometimes for concessionary treatment, or sometimes not in exchange for concessionary treatment and just in exchange for tax inspectors showing up and making things up.
Right.
The Post-Georgian Railways CEO has been vacant since Irakli Azubaya quit in October 2012. Also relating to rail lines, supposedly the tram plan for Tbilisi is off, which is really, really bad news. I hope that they will reconsider. But the idea of pulling up tracks in the middle of town, I mean the real rail tracks, and not having the current Vokzal as the railway station, which in my view was a very, very bad plan, also seems to be in abeyance. The idea behind that is that they've got a lot of oil moving right through the middle of Tbilisi right now, which is really a problem, and they need to have a bypass. They're building the bypass, but they were going to have the bypass for everything, including passenger traffic, which they don't make any money on passenger traffic. It's quite heavily subsidized, but passenger traffic should remain and really stay where it is right now. So if you like taking the train to Batumi and, you know, quite quickly, or the overnight to Zugdidi, which is great, then be sure you keep, tell the new CEO to keep that going.
These are things I do not like.
Oh, these are fantastic. Come on, don't complain. Meme watch this week is the video of Onise Gergadava, who took his shirt off outside Guldani Prison Number 8 and smeared honey on himself in a show of solidarity with former Interior Minister Bacho Akhalaya. Yes, you heard that correctly. He smeared honey on himself for Bacho.
Did he maybe give a reason why?
I don't know. Look, is there? I mean, somebody needs to help us out with this. Is there some Georgian cultural reason why you would smear honey on yourself in protest? Or?
I'm gonna just go with this one. All I can think of is the movie Heathers, where they say, like, you know, dip me in honey and throw me to the lesbian. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's that. I mean, you know, maybe it's that. Who knows? So anybody knows what's going on with the Tapli situation? You know, be sure to clue us in. This week's geocapital number is 173. Now, it's a little complicated, so, you know, put on your seatbelts. Which is the energy use intensity per $1,000 of GDP in Georgia, according to UN statistics? The energy use intensity is measured as the energy consumption equivalent of kilograms of oil. Because this measure is scaled by GDP, it shows how efficiently a country uses energy to produce GDP, corrected by purchasing power parity, you know, like the Big Macs index, or the not-quite-so-cool Khachapuri index of ISET. In the developed world, this number is generally lower, 121 in Germany, 135 in France, 101 in the UK. The U.S., being wildly inefficient, is an outlier at 180. Armenia and Azerbaijan are at roughly the same level as Georgia, with 176, 188, respectively. Turkey's energy intensity per 1,000 U.S. dollars of GDP is only 114. Russia, with 340, seems to use its energy incredibly inefficiently.
It's also pretty cold up there.
Yeah, okay, or maybe they need to, you know, that up in Siberia. That could be the possibility.
Well, it's subsidized, but then it's also GDP, so it's looking at population scale and...
But subsidies should not matter in the statistics. I mean, you know, obviously GDP does, but... this week's English language movie at the Roosevelt Theater across from Parliament are Oz the Great and Powerful at 8 p.m., and Jack the Giant Killer at 5:10 p.m. on Saturday. Tickets are 10 lotti, 50 tetri each. Kolga movies tomorrow, Zero Dark 30 at Dom Kino across from Rustaveli Metro and McDonald's. Tickets are 7 lotti. The official presentation of Georgia's entry for the 2013 Eurovision Song Competition will be held March 23rd. The Eurovision competition will be held in Malmö, Sweden, on May 14th, 16th, and 18th. Channel 1 has exclusive rights to air the music festival live.
I have another announcement, too. Some people might have heard the buzz on the street that TEDx Tbilisi 2013 will be coming up on April 20th. We will have registration on April 6th, but we're asking for 20 gel per ticket this year.
It's
20 lari per ticket this year. And people will actually have to come in person to purchase the tickets and pay in cash. We'll do this at the university, and I'm the director of TEDx BBC, which I guess I'll just share here.
You do it at Elia State University.
But don't you have to go online Saturday to
You have to go online in order to register, but you have to go in person to pay. So you can pay on behalf of other people, but we are accepting cash, which is for a couple of reasons. One is we want to, you know, decrease the number of no-shows. The second is that, you know, sponsorship, this money will be going towards, you know, making up for the sponsorship that we have not received.
So it's Saturday at 11 o'clock on the website in order to sign up, if I remember correctly. So
yes,
just
and then
make sure that you,
payment on the 6th.
Right,
of April.
So just make sure that you get to the website at 11 in order to get on, you know, to get your name down.
And the website is www.tedxtbilisi.com. We've got a number of very interesting speakers, and the event will be held on the 20th, as you said. So just wanted to give
Megobrev
listeners a heads up about that.
Yeah, if you might have any interest, just check the site, like, you know, today or Friday, to figure out what you need to do to get in there, because there was a lot of competition last time, and you needed to be right on time in order to get in. So just you know, so nobody's disappointed that would have liked to have done it. You know, if you don't get yourself organized till, you know, the middle of next week, it's not going to happen.
And this time we have because of the success of last year, there's actually three times as many seats that we have. So last year was only 100 seats. Now we have 300 seats.
That's it for this week. My Twitter address is @txtbuk. Our email is tpeelpod@gmail.com, or post to the forum on our website at www.tpeelpod.com. TBLPOD. And from 1978, this, from far and away, no contest, the most famous American musician in Malawi, Don Williams with Living on Tulsa Time.
I left Oklahoma driving in a Pontiac, just about to lose my mind. I was going to Arizona, maybe on to California, where the people all live so fine. My baby said I was crazy, my mama called me lazy. I was gonna show 'em all this time. 'Cause you know I ain't no fool and I don't need no more schooling. I was born to just walk the line. Living on Tulsa time. Living on Tulsa time. Well, you know I've been through it when I set my watch back to. Living on Tulsa time. Well, there I was in Hollywood, wishing I was doing good, talking on the telephone line. Songs, guess I'm just a wasting time. Well, then I got to thinking, man, I'm really sinking, and I really had a flash this time. I had no business leaving, and nobody would be grieving if I went on back to Tulsa time. Living on Tulsa time. Living back to it, 'cause you know I've been through it. Living on.